I would become so familiar with the house that I could navigate it even if someone blinded me. A breeze announced his arrival, and I turned from the table toward the long hall to the open glass doors to the garden. I'd forgotten how huge he was in this form, forgotten the curled horns and lupine face, the bear-like body that moved with a feline fluidity. His green eyes glowed in the darkness, fixing on me, and as the doors snicked shut behind him, the clicking of claws on marble filled the hall. I stood still, not daring to flinch, to move a muscle. He limped slightly, and in the moonlight, dark shining stains were left in his wake. He continued toward me, stealing the air from the entire hall. He was so big that the space felt cramped, like a cage. The scrape of claw, a huff of uneven breathing, the dripping of blood. Between one step and the next, he changed forms, and I squeezed my eyes shut at the blinding flash. When at last my eyes adjusted to the returning darkness, he was standing in front of me. Standing, but not quite there. No sign of the baldric or his knives. His clothes were in shreds, long, vicious slashes that made me wonder how he wasn't gutted and dead. But the muscled skin peering out beneath his shirt was smooth, unharmed. "Did you kill the bog?" My voice was hardly more than a whisper.
"Yes."
A dull, empty answer. As if he couldn't be bothered to remember to be pleasant. As if I were at the very, very bottom of a long list of priorities.
"You're hurt," I said, even more quietly. Indeed, his hand was covered in blood, even more splattering on the floor beneath him. He looked at it blankly, as if it took some monumental effort to remember that he even had a hand and that it was injured. What effort of will and strength had it taken to kill the bog, to face that wretched menace? How deep had he had to dig inside himself, to whatever immortal power and animal that lived there, to kill it? He glanced down at the map on the table, and his voice was void of anything, any emotion, any anger or amusement, as he said,
"What is that?"
I snatched up the map. "I thought I should learn my surroundings." Drip, drip, drip. I opened my mouth to point out his hand again, but he said,
"You can't write, can you?"
I didn't answer. I didn't know what to say. Ignorant, insignificant human.
"No wonder you became so adept at other things."
I supposed he was so far gone in thinking about his encounter with the bog that he hadn't realized the compliment he'd given me, if it was a compliment. Another splatter of blood on the marble.
"Where can we clean up your hand?"
He lifted his head to look at me again, still and silent and weary. Then he said,
"There's a small infirmary."
I wanted to tell myself that it was probably the most useful thing I'd learned all night. But as I followed him there, avoiding the blood he trailed, I thought of what Lucian had told me about his isolation, that burden. Thought of what Tamlin had mentioned about how these estates should not have been his, and felt sorry for him. The infirmary was well stocked, but was more of a supply closet with a work table than an actual place to host sick fairies. I suppose that was all they needed when they could heal themselves with their immortal powers. But this wound wasn't healing.
Tamlin slumped against the edge of the table, gripping his injured hand at the wrist as he watched me sort through the supplies in the cabinets and drawers. When I'd gathered what I needed, I tried not to balk at the thought of touching him, but I didn't let myself give in to my dread as I took his hand, the heat of his skin like an inferno against my cool fingers. I cleaned off his bloody, dirty hand, bracing for the first flash of those claws. But his claws remained retracted, and he kept silent as I bound and wrapped his hand. Surprisingly enough, there were no more than a few vicious cuts, none of them requiring stitching. I secured the bandage in place and stepped away, bringing the bowl of bloody water to the deep sink in the back of the room. His eyes were a brand upon me as I finished cleaning, and the room became too small, too hot. He'd killed the bog and walked away relatively unscathed. If Tamlin was that powerful, then the High Lords of Prithian must be near gods. Every mortal instinct in my body bleated in panic at the thought. I was almost at the open door, stifling the urge to bolt back to my room when he said,
"You can't write, yet you learned to hunt, to survive. How?"
I paused with my foot on the threshold. "That's what happens when you're responsible for lives other than your own, isn't it? You do what you have to do." He was still sitting on the table, still straddling that inner line between the here and now and wherever he had to go in his mind to endure the fight with the bog. I met his feral and glowing stare.
"You aren't what I expected, for a human," he said.
I didn't reply, and he didn't say goodbye as I walked out. The next morning, as I made my way down the grand staircase, I tried not to think too much about the clean-washed marble tiles on the floor below. No sign of the blood Tamlin had lost. I tried not to think too much at all about our encounter, actually. When I found the front hall empty, I almost smiled, felt a ripple in that hollow emptiness that had been hounding me. Perhaps now, perhaps in this moment of quiet, I could at last look through the art on the walls, take time to observe it, learn it, admire it. Heart racing at the thought, I was about to head toward a hall I had noted was nearly covered in painting after painting when low male voices floated out from the dining room. I paused. The voices were tense enough that I made my steps silent as I slid into the shadows behind the open door. A cowardly, wretched thing to do, but what they were saying had me shoving aside any guilt.
"I just want to know what you think you're doing."
It was Lucian, that familiar lazy viciousness coating each word.
"What are you doing?" Tamlin snapped.
Through the space between the hinge and the door, I could glimpse the two of them standing almost face to face. On Tamlin's non-bandaged hand, his claws shone in the morning light.
"Me?"
Lucian put a hand on his chest.
"By the cauldron, Tam, there isn't much time, and you're just sulking and glowering. You're not even trying to fake it anymore."
My brows rose. Tamlin turned away, but whirled back a moment later, his teeth bared.
"It was a mistake from the start. I can't stomach it, not after what my father did to their kind, to their lands. I won't follow in his footsteps, won't be that sort of person, so back off."
"Back off? Back off while you seal our fates and ruin everything? I stayed with you out of hope, not to watch you stumble. For someone with a heart of stone, yours is certainly soft these days. The bog was on our lands. The bog, Tamlin! The barriers between courts have vanished, and even our woods are teeming with filth like the puka. Are you just going to start living out there? Slaughtering every bit of vermin that slinks in?"
"Watch your mouth," Tamlin said.
Lucian stepped toward him, exposing his teeth as well. A pulsing kind of air hit me in the stomach, and a metallic stench filled my nose. But I couldn't see any magic, only feel it. I couldn't tell if that made it worse.
Don't push me, Lucian.
Tamlin's tone became dangerously quiet, and the hair on the back of my neck stood as he emitted a growl that was pure animal.
You don't think I know what's happening on my own lands? What I've got to lose? What's lost already?
The blight. Perhaps it was contained, but it seemed it was still wreaking havoc, still a threat, and perhaps one they didn't truly want me knowing about, either from lack of trust or because I was no one and nothing to them. I leaned forward, but as I did, my finger slipped and softly thudded against the door. A human might not have heard, but both High Fae whirled. My heart stumbled. I stepped toward the threshold, clearing my throat as I came up with a dozen excuses to shield myself. I looked at Lucian and forced myself to smile. His eyes widened, and I had to wonder if it was because of that smile or because I looked truly guilty. Are you going out for a ride? I said, feeling a bit sick as I gestured behind me with a thumb. I hadn't planned on riding with him today, but it sounded like a decent excuse. Lucian's russet eye was bright, though the smile he gave me didn't meet it. The face of Tamlin's emissary, more court-trained and calculating than I'd seen him yet.
I'm unavailable today, he said.
He jerked his chin to Tamlin.
He'll go with you.
Tamlin shot his friend a look of disdain that he took few pains to hide. His usual baldric was armed with more knives than I'd seen before, and their ornate metal handles glinted as he turned to me, his shoulders tight.
Wherever you want to go, just say so.
The claws of his free hand slipped back under his skin. No. I almost said it aloud as I turned pleading eyes to Lucian. Lucian merely patted my shoulder as he passed by.
Perhaps tomorrow, human.
Alone with Tamlin, I swallowed hard. He stood there waiting. I don't want to go for a hunt, I finally said quietly. True. I hate hunting. He cocked his head.
Then what do you want to do?
Tamlin led me down the halls. A soft breeze laced with the scent of roses slipped in through the open windows to caress my face.
You've been going for hunts, Tamlin said at last, but you really don't have any interest in hunting.
He cast me a sidelong glance.
No wonder you two never catch anything.
No trace of the hollow cold warrior of the night before, or of the angry Fey noble of minutes before. Just Tamlin right now, it seemed. I'd be a fool to let my guard down around Tamlin, to think that his acting naturally meant anything, especially when something was so clearly amiss at his estate. He'd taken down the bog, and that made him the most dangerous creature I'd ever encountered. I didn't quite know what to make of him, and said somewhat stiltedly, "How's your hand?" He flexed his bandaged hand, studying the white bindings, stark and clean against his sun-kissed skin.
I didn't thank you.
You don't need to. But he shook his head, and his golden hair caught and held the morning light as if it were spun from the sun itself.
The bog's bite was crafted to slow the healing of High Fae long enough to kill us. You have my gratitude.
When I shrugged it off, he added,
How did you learn to bind wounds like this? I can still use the hand, even with the wrappings.
Trial and error. I had to be able to pull a bowstring the next day. He was quiet as we turned down another sun-drenched marble hallway, and I dared to look at him. I found him carefully studying me, his lips in a thin line.
"Has anyone ever taken care of you?"
he asked quietly. "No." I'd long since stopped feeling sorry for myself about it.
"Did you learn to hunt in a similar manner? Trial and error?"
"I spied on hunters when I could get away with it, and then practiced until I hit something. When I missed, we didn't eat. So learning how to aim was the first thing I figured out."
"I'm curious," he said casually.
The amber in his green eyes was glowing. Perhaps not all traces of that beast warrior were gone.
"Are you ever going to use that knife you stole from my table?"
I stiffened.
"How did you know?"
Beneath the mask, I could have sworn his brows were raised.
"I was trained to notice those things, but I could smell the fear on you more than anything."
I grumbled. I thought no one noticed. He gave me a crooked smile, more genuine than all the faked smiles and flattery he'd given me before.
"Regardless of the treaty, if you want to stand a chance at escaping my kind, you'll need to think more creatively than stealing dinner knives. But with your affinity for eavesdropping, maybe you'll someday learn something valuable."
My ears flared with heat. I wasn't... "Sorry," I mumbled. But I ran through what I'd overheard. There was no point in pretending I hadn't eavesdropped. "Lucian said you didn't have much time. What did he mean? Are more creatures like the bog going to come here thanks to the blight?" Tamlin went rigid, scanning the hall around us, taking in every sight and sound and scent. Then he shrugged, too stiff to be genuine.
"I'm an immortal. I have nothing but time, Thera."
He said my name with such intimacy, as if he weren't a creature capable of killing monsters made from nightmares. I opened my mouth to demand more of an answer, but he cut me off.
"The force plaguing our lands and powers, that too will pass someday if we're cauldron blessed. But yes, now that the bog entered these lands, I'd say it's fair to assume others might follow it, especially if the Puka was already so bold."
If the borders between the courts were gone, though, as I'd heard Lucian say, if everything in Prithian was different, as Tamlin had claimed, thanks to this blight, well, I didn't want to be caught up in some brutal war or revolution. I doubted I'd survive very long. Tamlin strode ahead and opened a set of double doors at the end of the hall. The powerful muscles of his back shifted beneath his clothes. I'd never forget what he was, what he was capable of, what he'd been trained to do, apparently.
"As requested," he said, "the study."
I saw what lay beyond him, and my stomach twisted. Chapter 13. Tamlin waved his hand, and 100 candles sprang to life. Whatever Lucian had said about magic being drained and off-kilter thanks to the blight clearly hadn't affected Tamlin as dramatically, or perhaps he'd been far more powerful to start with, if he could transform his sentries into wolves whenever he pleased. The tang of magic stung my senses, but I kept my chin high. That is, until I peered inside. My palms began sweating as I took in the enormous, opulent study. Tomes lined each wall like the soldiers of a silent army, and couches, desks, and rich rugs were scattered throughout the room. But It had been over a week since I left my family. Though my father had said never to return, though my vow to my mother was fulfilled, I could at least let them know I was safe, relatively safe, and warn them about the sickness sweeping across Prithian that might someday soon cross the wall. There was only one method to convey it.
Do you need anything else?
Tamlin asked, and I jerked. He still stood behind me. No, I said, striding into the study. I couldn't think about the casual power he'd just shown, the graceful carelessness with which he'd brought so many flames to life. I had to focus on the task at hand. It wasn't entirely my fault that I was scarcely able to read. Before our downfall, my mother had sorely neglected our education, not bothering to hire a governess. And after poverty struck, and my elder sisters, who could read and write, deemed the village school beneath us, they didn't bother to teach me. I could read enough to function, enough to form my letters, but so poorly that even signing my name was mortifying. It was bad enough that Tamlin knew. I would think about how to get the letter to one of them once it was finished. Perhaps I could beg a favor of him, or Lucian. Asking them to write it would be too humiliating. I could hear their words. Typical, ignorant human. And since Lucian seemed convinced that I would turn spy the moment I could, he would no doubt burn the letter, and any I tried to write after. So I'd have to learn myself.
I'll leave you to it then,
Tamlin said as our silence became too prolonged, too tense. I didn't move until he'd closed the doors, shutting me inside. My heartbeat pulsed throughout my body as I approached a shelf. I had to take a break for dinner and to sleep, but I was back in the study before the dawn had fully risen. I'd found a small writing desk in a corner and gathered papers and ink. My finger traced a line of text, and I whispered the words. She grabbed her shoe, standing from her I sat back in my chair and pressed the heels of my palms into my eyes. When I felt less near to ripping out my hair, I took the quill and underlined the word, position. With a shaking hand, I did my best to copy letter after letter onto the ever-growing list I kept beside the book. There were at least 40 words on it, their letters malformed and barely legible. I would look up their pronunciations later. I rose from the chair, needing to stretch my legs, my spine, or just to get away from that lengthy list of words I didn't know how to pronounce and the permanent heat that now warmed my face and neck. I suppose the study was more of a library, as I couldn't see any of the walls thanks to the small labyrinth of stacks flanking the main area and a mezzanine dangling above, covered wall to wall in books. But study sounded less intimidating. I meandered through some of the stacks, following a trickle of sunlight to a bank of windows on the far side. I found myself overlooking a rose garden, filled with dozens of hues of crimson and pink and white and yellow. I might have allowed myself a moment to take in the colors, gleaming with dew under the morning sun, had I not glimpsed the painting that stretched along the wall beside the windows. Not a painting, I thought, blinking as I stepped back to view its massive expanse. No, it was... I searched for the word in that half-forgotten part of my mind. Mural. That's what it was. At first, I could do nothing but stare at its size, the ambition of it, at the fact that this masterpiece was tucked back here for no one to ever see, as if it was nothing. Absolutely nothing to create something like this. It told a story with the way colors and shapes and light flowed, the way tone shifted across the mural. The story of Prithian. It began with a cauldron. A mighty black cauldron held by glowing slender female hands in a starry, endless night. Those hands tipped it over, golden sparkling liquid pouring out over the lip. No, not sparkling, but effervescent with small symbols, perhaps of some ancient fairy language. Whatever was written there, whatever it was, the contents of the cauldron were dumped into the void below, pooling on the earth to form our world. The map spanned the entirety of our world, not just the land on which we stood, but also the seas and the larger continents beyond. Each territory was marked and colored, some with intricate ornate depictions of the beings who had once ruled over lands that now belonged to humans. All of it, I remembered with a shudder, all of the world had once been theirs, as far as they believed, crafted for them by the bearer of the cauldron. There was no mention of humans, no sign of us here. I supposed we'd been as low as pigs to them. It was hard to look at the next panel. It was so simple, yet so detailed, that for a moment, I stood there on that battlefield, feeling the texture of the bloodied mud beneath me, shoulder to shoulder with the thousands of other human soldiers lined up, facing the fairy hordes who charged at us. A moment of pause before the slaughter. The humans' arrows and swords seemed so pointless against the high fae in their glimmering armor, or the fairies bristling with claws and fangs. I knew without another panel to explicitly show me, the humans hadn't survived that particular battle. The smear of black on the panel beside it, tinged with glimmers of red, said enough. Then another map of a much reduced fairy realm. Northern territories had been cut up and divided to make room for the High Fae, who had lost their lands to the south of the wall. Everything north of the wall went to them. Everything south was left as a blur of nothing. A decimated, forgotten world, as if the painter couldn't be bothered to render it. I scanned the various lands and territories now given to the High Fae. Still so much territory. Such monstrous power spread across the entire northern part of our world. I knew they were ruled by kings or queens or councils or empresses, but I'd never seen a representation of it, of how much they'd been forced to concede to the south, and how crammed their lands now were in comparison. Our massive island had fared well for Prithian by comparison, with only the bottom tip given over to us miserable humans. The bulk of the sacrifice was borne by the southernmost of the seven territories, a territory painted with crocuses and lambs and roses. Spring lands. I took a step closer until I could see the dark, ugly smear that acted as the wall, another spiteful touch by the painter. No markers in the human realm, nothing to indicate any of the larger towns or centers, but I found the rough area where our village was and the woods that separated it from the wall. Those 2 days' journey seemed so small, too small compared to the power lurking above us. I traced a line, my finger hovering over the paint, up over the wall into these lands, the lands of the Spring Court. Again, no markers, but it was filled with touches of spring, trees in bloom, fickle storms, young animals. At least I was to live out my days in one of the more moderate courts, weather-wise. A small consolation. I looked northward and stepped back again. The 6 other courts of Prithian occupied a patchwork of territories. Autumn, summer, and winter were easy enough to pick out. Then above them, two glowing quartz. The southernmost one a softer, redder palette, the dawn quart. Above, in bright gold and yellow and blue, the day quart. And above that, perched in a frozen, mountainous spread of darkness and stars, the sprawling, massive territory of the night quart. There were things in the shadows between those mountains, little eyes, gleaming teeth, a land of lethal beauty. The hair on my arms rose. I might have examined the other kingdoms across the seas that flanked our land, like the isolated fairy kingdom to the west that seemed to have gotten away with no territory loss and was still law unto itself, had I not looked to the heart of that beautiful living map. In the center of the land, as if it were the core around which everything else had spread, or perhaps the place where the cauldron's liquid had first touched, was a small, snowy mountain range. From it arose a mammoth solitary peak, bald of snow, bald of life, as if the elements refused to touch it. There were no more clues about what it might be, nothing to indicate its importance, and I supposed that the viewers were already supposed to know. This was not a mural for human eyes. With that thought, I went back to my little table. At least I'd learned the layout of their lands, and I knew to never, ever go north. I eased into my seat and found my place in the book, my face warming as I glanced at the illustrations scattered throughout. A children's book, and yet I could scarcely make it through its 20 or so pages. Why did Tamlin have children's books in his library? Were they from his own childhood, or in anticipation of children to come? It didn't matter. I couldn't even read them. I hated the smell of these books, the decaying rot of the pages, the mocking whisper of the paper, the rough skin of the binding. I looked at the piece of paper, at all those words I didn't know. I bunched my list in my hand, crumpling the paper into a ball and chucked it into the rubbish bin.
I could help you to write to them, if that's why you're in here.
I jerked back in my seat, almost knocking over the chair, and whirled to find Tamlin behind me, a stack of books in his arms. I pushed back against the heat rising in my cheeks and ears, the panic at the information he might be guessing I'd been trying to send. Help? You mean a fairy is passing up the opportunity to mock an ignorant mortal? He set the books down on the table, his jaw tight. I couldn't read the titles glinting on the leather spines.
Why should I mock you for a shortcoming that isn't your fault? Let me help you. I owe you for the hand.
Shortcoming. It was a shortcoming. Yet it was one thing to bandage his hand, to talk to him as if he wasn't a predator built to kill and destroy, but to reveal how little I truly knew, to let him see that part of me that was still a child, unfinished and raw. His face was unreadable. Though there had been no pity in his voice, I straightened. I'm fine.
You think I've got nothing better to do with my time than come up with elaborate ways to humiliate you?
I thought of that smear of nothing that the painter had used to render the human lands and didn't have an answer. At least, not one that was polite. I'd given enough already to them. To him. Tamlin shook his head.
So you'll let Lucian take you on hunts and...
Lucian,
I interrupted quietly, but not softly.
Doesn't pretend to be anything but what he is.
What's that supposed to mean?
He growled, but his claws stayed retracted even as he clenched his hands into fists at his sides. I was definitely walking a dangerous line, but I didn't care. Even if he'd offered me sanctuary, I didn't have to fall at his feet. It means, I said with that same cold quiet, that I don't know you. I don't know who you are or what you really are or what you want.
It means you don't trust me.
How can I trust a fairy? Don't you delight in killing and tricking us? His snarl set the flames of the candles guttering.
You aren't what I had in mind for a human, believe me.
I could almost feel the wound deep in my chest as it ripped open and all those awful, silent words came pouring out. Illiterate, ignorant, unremarkable, proud, cold. All spoken from Nesta's mouth, all echoing in my head with her sneering voice. I pinched my lips together. He winced and lifted a hand slightly, as if about to reach for me.
Feyre, he began,
softly enough that I just shook my head and left the room. He didn't stop me. But that afternoon, when I went to retrieve my crumpled list from the wastebasket, it was gone. And my pile of books had been disturbed, the titles out of order. It had probably been a servant, I assured myself, calming the tightness in my chest. Just Alice or some other bird-masked fairy cleaning up. I hadn't written anything incriminating. There was no way he knew I'd been trying to warn my family. I doubted he would punish me for it, but our conversation earlier had been bad enough. Still, my hands were unsteady as I took my seat at the little desk and found my place in the book I'd used that morning. I knew it was shameful to mark the books with ink, but if Tamlin could afford gold plates, he could replace a book or two. I stared at the book without seeing the jumble of letters. Maybe I was a fool for not accepting his help, for not swallowing my pride and having him write the letter in a few moments. Not even a letter of warning, but just to let them know I was safe. If he had better things to do with his time than come up with ways to embarrass me, then surely he had better things to do than help me write letters to my family. And yet, he'd offered. A nearby clock chimed the hour. Shortcoming. Another one of my shortcomings. I rubbed my brows with my thumb and forefinger. I'd been equally foolish for feeling a shred of pity for him, for the lone, brooding fairy, for someone I had so stupidly thought would really care if he met someone who perhaps felt the same, perhaps understood, in my ignorant, insignificant human way, what it was like to bear the weight of caring for others. I should have let his hand bleed that night, should have known better than to think that maybe there would be someone, human or fairy or whatever, who could understand what my life, what I had become these past few years. A minute passed, then another. Fairies might not be able to lie, but they could certainly withhold information. Tamlin, Lucien, and Alice had done their best not to answer my specific questions. Knowing more about the blight that threatened them, knowing anything about it, where it had come from, what else it could do, and especially what it could do to a human, was worth my time to learn. And if there was a chance that they might possess some knowledge about a forgotten loophole of that damned treaty, if they knew some way to pay the debt I owed and return me to my family so I might warn them about the blight myself, I had to risk it. 20 minutes later, I had tracked down Lucien in his bedroom. I'd marked on my little map where it was, in a separate wing on the second level, far from mine. And after searching his usual haunts, it was the last place to look. I knocked on the white-painted double doors.
Come in, human.
He could probably detect me by my breathing patterns alone, or maybe that eye of his could see through the door. I eased open the door. The room was similar to mine in shape, but was bedecked in hues of orange and red and gold, with faint traces of green and brown, like being in an autumn wood, But while my room was all softness and grace, his was marked with ruggedness. In lieu of a pretty breakfast table by the window, a worn work table dominated the space, covered in various weapons. It was there he sat, wearing only a white shirt and trousers, his red hair unbound and gleaming like liquid fire. Tamlin's court-trained emissary, but a warrior in his own right.
"I haven't seen you around," I said, shutting the door and leaning against it.
"I had to go sort out some hotheads on the northern border. Official emissary business," he said,
setting down the hunting knife he'd been cleaning, a long, vicious blade.
"I got back in time to hear your little spat with Tam and decided I was safer up here. I'm glad to hear your human heart has warmed to me, though. At least I'm not on the top of your killing list."
I gave him a long look.
"Well," he went on, shrugging, "it seems that you managed to get under Tam's fur enough that he sought me out and nearly bit my head off. So I suppose I can thank you for ruining what should have been a peaceful lunch. Thankfully for me, there's been a disturbance out in the Western Forest, and my poor friend had to go deal with it in that way only he can. I'm surprised you didn't run into him on the stairs."
Thank the forgotten gods for some small mercies.
"What sort of disturbance?"
Lucian shrugged, but the movement was too tense to be careless.
"The usual sort. Unwanted nasty creatures raising hell."
Good. Good that Tamlin was away and wouldn't be here to catch me in what I planned to do. Another bit of luck.
"I'm impressed you answered me that much," I said as casually as I could, thinking through my words. "But it's too bad you're not like the Suriel, spouting any information I want if I'm clever enough to snare you." For a moment he blinked at me. Then his mouth twisted to the side and that metal eye whizzed and narrowed on me.
"I suppose you won't tell me what you want to know."
"You have your secrets and I have mine," I said carefully.
I couldn't tell whether he would try to convince me otherwise if I told him the truth.
"But if you were a Suriel," I added with deliberate slowness, in case he hadn't caught my meaning, "how exactly would I trap you?" Lucian set down the knife and picked at his nails. For a moment, I wondered if he would tell me anything at all. Wondered if he would go right to Tamlin and tattle. But then he said,
"I'd probably have a weakness for groves of young birch trees in the western woods, and freshly slaughtered chickens, and would probably be so greedy that I wouldn't notice the double loop snare rigged around the grove to pin my legs in place."
"Hmm."
I didn't dare ask why he had decided to be accommodating. There was still a good chance he wouldn't mind seeing me dead, but I would risk it. "I somehow prefer you as High Fae." He smirked, but the amusement was short-lived.
"If I were insane and stupid enough to go after a Suriel, I'd also take a bow and quiver, and maybe a knife, just like this one."
He sheathed the knife he'd cleaned and set it down at the edge of the table. An offering.
"And I'd be prepared to run like hell when I freed it, to the nearest running water, which they hate crossing."
"But you're not insane, so you'll be here? Safe and sound?"
"I'll be conveniently hunting on the grounds, and with my superior hearing, I might be feeling generous enough to listen if someone screams from the western woods. But it's a good thing I had no role in telling you to go out today, since Tam would eviscerate anyone who told you how to trap a Suriel. And it's a good thing I had planned to hunt anyway, because if anyone caught me helping you, there would be trouble of a whole other hell awaiting us. I hope your secrets are worth it."
He said it with his usual grin, but there was an edge to it, a warning I didn't miss. Another riddle, and another bit of information. I said,
It's a good thing that while you have superior hearing, I possess superior abilities to keep my mouth shut. He snorted as I took the knife from the table and turned to procure the bow from my room.
I think I'm starting to like you, for a murdering human.
Chapter 14. Western Woods. Grove of young birch trees, slaughtered chicken, double loop snare, close to running water. I repeated Lucian's instructions as I walked out of the manor, through the cultivated gardens, across the wild, rolling, grassy hills beyond them, over clear streams and into the spring woods beyond. No one had stopped me. No one had even been around to see me leave, bow and quiver across my back, Lucian's knife at my side. I lugged along a satchel stuffed with a freshly dead chicken, courtesy of the baffled kitchen staff, and had tucked an extra blade into my boot. The lands were as empty as the manor itself, though I occasionally glimpsed something shining in the corner of my eye. Every time I turned to look, the shimmering transformed into the sunlight dancing on a nearby stream, or the wind fluttering the leaves of a lone sycamore atop a knoll. As I passed a large pond nestled at the foot of a towering hill, I could have sworn I saw four shining female heads poking up from the bright water, watching me. I hurried my steps. Only birds and the chittering and rustle of small animals sounded as I entered the still green western forest. I'd never ridden through these woods on my hunts with Lucian. There was no path here, nothing tame about it. Oaks, elms, and beeches intertwined in a thick weave, almost strangling the trickle of sunlight that crept in through the dense canopy. The moss-covered earth swallowed any sound I made. Old. This forest was ancient. And alive, in a way that I couldn't describe but could only feel, deep in the marrow of my bones. Perhaps I was the first human in 500 years to walk beneath those heavy, dark branches, to inhale the freshness of spring leaves masking the damp, thick rot. Birch trees. Running water. I made my way through the woods, breath tight in my throat. Night was the dangerous time, I reminded myself. I had only a few hours until sunset. Even if the bog had stalked us in the daylight. The bog was dead, and whatever horror Tamlin was now dealing with dwelled in another part of these lands, the Spring Court. I wondered in what ways Tamlin had to answer to its High Lord, or if it was his High Lord who had carved out Lucian's eye. Maybe it was the High Lord's consort, the she whom Lucian had mentioned, that instilled such fear in them. I pushed away the thought. I kept my steps light, my eyes and ears open, and my heartbeat steady. Shortcomings or no, I could still hunt, and the answers I needed were worth it. I found a glen of young, skinny birch trees, then stalked in ever-widening circles until I encountered the nearest stream. Not deep, but so wide that I'd have to take a running leap to cross it. Lucian had said to find running water, and this was close enough to make escape possible. If I needed to escape, hopefully I wouldn't. I traced and then retraced several different routes to the stream, and a few alternate routes, should my access to it somehow be blocked. And when I was sure of every root and rock and hollow in the surrounding area, I returned to the small clearing encircled by those white trees and laid my snare. From my spot up in a nearby tree, a sturdy, dense oak whose vibrant leaves hid me entirely from anyone below, I waited. And waited. The afternoon sun crept overhead, hot enough even through the canopy that I had to shrug off my cloak and roll up the sleeves of my tunic. My stomach grumbled,
and I pulled a hunk of cheese out of my rucksack. Eating it would be quieter than the apple I'd also swiped from the kitchen on my way out. When I finished it off, I swigged water from the canteen I'd brought, parched from the heat. Did Tamlin or Lucian ever grow tired of day after day of eternal spring, or ever venture into the other territories, if only to experience a different season? I wouldn't have minded endless mild spring while looking after my family. Winter brought us dangerously close to death every year. But if I were immortal, I might want a little variation to pass the time. I'd probably want to do more than lurk about a manor house, too. Though I still hadn't worked up the nerve to make the request that had crept into the back of my mind when I saw the mural. I moved about as much as I dared on the branch, only to keep the blood flowing to my limbs. I'd just settled in again when a ripple of silence came toward me. As if the wood thrushes and squirrels and moths held their breath while something passed by. My bow was already strung. Quietly, I loosely knocked an arrow. Closer and closer, the silence crept. The trees seemed to lean in, their entwined branches locking tighter, a living cage keeping even the smallest of birds from soaring out of the canopy. Maybe this had been a very bad idea. Maybe Lucian had overestimated my abilities, or maybe he had been waiting for the chance to lead me to my doom. My muscles strained from holding still atop the branch, but I kept my balance and listened. Then I heard it, a whisper, as if cloth were dragging over root and stone, a hungry wheezing sniffing from the nearby clearing. I'd laid my snares carefully, making the chicken look as if it had wandered too far and snapped its own neck as it sought to free itself from a fallen branch. I'd taken care to keep my own scent off the bird as much as possible. But these fairies had such keen senses, and even though I'd covered my tracks, there was a snap, a whoosh, and a hollowed-out wicked scream that made my bones and muscles and breath lock up. Another enraged shriek pierced the forest, and my snares groaned as they held and held and held. I climbed out of the tree and went to meet the Suriel. Lucian, I decided as I crept up to the fairy in the birch glen, really, truly wanted me dead. I hadn't known what to expect as I entered the ring of white trees, tall and straight as pillars, but it was not the tall, thin, veiled figure in dark, tattered robes. Its hunched back facing me, I could count the hard knobs of its spine poking through the thin fabric. Spindly, scabby gray arms clawed at the snare with yellow, cracked fingernails. Run, some primal, intrinsically human part of me whispered. Begged. Run and never look back. But I kept my arrow loosely nocked. I said quietly, "Are you one of the Suriel?" The fairy went rigid and sniffed once, twice. Then slowly it turned to me, the dark veil draped over its bald head blowing in a phantom breeze. A face that looked like it had been crafted from dried, weather-worn bone, its skin either forgotten or discarded, a lipless mouth and two long teeth held by blackened gums, slitted holes for nostrils and eyes. Eyes that were nothing more than swirling pits of milky white. The white of death, the white of sickness, the white of clean-picked corpses. Peeking above the ragged neck of its dark robes was a body of veins and bones, as dried and solid and horrific as the texture of its face. It let go of the snare, and its two long fingers clicked against each other as it studied me. "Human," it said, and its voice was at once one and many, old and young, beautiful and grotesque.
My bowels turned watery.
Did you set this clever, wicked trap for me?
Are you one of the Suriel? I asked again, my words scarcely more than a ragged breath.
Indeed, I am.
Click, click, click went its fingers against each other, one for each word. Then the trap was for you, I managed.
Run, run, run!
It remained sitting, its bare, gnarled feet caught in my snares.
I have not seen a human woman for an age. Come closer, so I might look upon my captor.
I did no such thing. It let out a huffing, awful laugh.
And which of my brethren betrayed my secrets to you?
None of them. My mother told me stories of you.
Lies. I can smell the lies on your breath.
It sniffed again, its fingers clacking together. It cocked its head to the side, an erratic, sharp movement, the dark veil snapping with it.
What would a human woman want from the Suriel?
You tell me, I said softly. It let out another low laugh.
A test? A foolish and useless test, for if you dare to capture me, then you must want knowledge very badly.
I said nothing, and it smiled with that lipless mouth, its grayed teeth horrifically large.
Ask me your questions, human, and then free me.
I swallowed hard. Is there truly no way for me to go home?
Not unless you seek to be killed and your family with you. You must remain here.
Whatever last shred of hope I'd been clinging to, whatever foolish optimism shriveled and died, this changed nothing. Before my fight with Tamlin that morning, I hadn't even entertained the idea anyway. Perhaps I'd only come here out of spite. So, fine. If I was here facing sure death, then I might as well learn something. What do you know about Tamlin?
More specific, human. Be more specific. For I know a good many things about the High Lord of the Spring Court.
The earth tilted beneath me. Tamlin is a High Lord?
Click, click, click. You did not know. Interesting.
Not just some petty fairy lord of a manor, but a High Lord of one of the seven territories. A High Lord of Prithian.
Did you also not know that this is the Spring Court, little human?
Yes. Yes, I knew about that. The Suriel settled on the ground.
Spring, summer, autumn, winter, dawn, day, and night, it mused,
as if I hadn't even answered.
The seven courts of Prithian, each ruled by a High Lord, all of them deadly in their own way. They are not merely powerful, they are power.
That was why Tamlin had been able to face the bog and live. High Lord. I tucked away my fear. Everyone at the Spring Court is stuck wearing a mask, and yet you aren't, I said cautiously. Are you not a member of the court?
I am a member of no court. I am older than the High Lords, older than Prithian, older than the bones of this world.
Lucian had definitely overestimated my abilities. And what can be done about this blight that has spread in Prithian, stealing and altering the magic? Where did it come from?
Stay with the High Lord, human, the Suriel said. That's all you can do. You will be safe. Do not interfere. Do not go looking for answers after today.
or you will be devoured by the shadow over Prithian. He will shield you from it, so stay close to him, and all will be